This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello, fellow ILTians. Welcome to what we hope to be an ongoing but short-lived series, Go Away, Mr. COVID-19, on the trials and tribulations of a CISO and his firm going full working remote. Our guest is John Washburn, Chief Information Security Officer, or CISO, at Stoll Rees LLP. Hi, John. How are you? Can you give us a little bit of your background?
Sure. I'm doing good, working from my fancy little office here at home. I get to tease people. I have a fireplace in my office, so it's kind of better to work from home sometimes than to actually go into the office. So I'm the Chief Information Security Officer at Stoll Rees. I've been there since 2011. In addition to being at Stoll Rees, I'm also on the executive committee for the LSISO. And I'm also on various content coordinating teams or planning for the ILTA LegalSec event every year, or just spouting off on various ILTA blog posts or forums, et cetera. Other stuff I do, I'm also on a group with the state of Oregon called the Oregon Cybersecurity Advisory Council, and ride a motorcycle most of the time when the weather's nice. And unfortunately, here in Portland, Oregon, the entire time, except for yesterday, that we've been working from home during COVID-19, it's been raining. So I'm just trapped at this desk, I guess, most of the time.
Well, I feel you there, John. Not a big fan of the rain, so keep it out there. All right, so our first question, first and foremost, I think our listeners at home, which I'm pretty sure is just about everyone at this point, the big question, the most serious one, is pants or shorts during your high-level conference meetings?
Oh. Always pants. I would tell people, if you decide to go shorts, I guarantee you will have to stand up and do something during the meeting, either shoo away the kids or pick up the cat off the desk or something. So yes, always pants.
Excellent. All right. Question two. The biggest challenge COVID-19, the work from home lockdown, has posed to you as a CISO?
So I think the biggest challenge for us so far has been physical security. What I mean by that is not physical security of your house. I don't think people are going to break in and take stuff from people's homes. But our industry is still paper heavy. I think that other than maybe nuclear energy, legal is probably the last organization to get away from paper, the last industry to get away from paper, I mean. We have lawyers who, of course, still need to print, still need to scan, still need to mail, still need to file, not in federal court. Thankfully, federal court will take electronic filing, but your local, state, county, city, whatever jurisdictions probably still require paper filing. We have lawyers who aren't able, for whatever reason, to redline electronically. They just like paper. So our biggest worry right now is, what are we going to do with all the paper? How are we going to manage paper so that it's secure, not just from theft, but also secure from loss or accidents? You know, when you're printing a lot of paper at home, you're invariably going to spread it around. I don't think the kids or the dog are going to come and eat it, though I'm waiting for the dog ate my legal brief excuse to happen during COVID-19. But when we're done, how does that paper get back into the office? How do we securely destroy paper? How do we make sure that people haven't saved stuff to their home computers or done anything crazy? Because right now, when we do risk assessment, normally we might think, oh, this stuff isn't secure, we're not going to do it because we want perfect security. But there really is no such thing. And in situations like this, the perfect is the enemy of the good, right? We want to make sure that we can support the business, which is the number one priority right now, while also being as secure as we possibly can.
Understood. All right, next question. Given this is a worldwide pandemic, were any previously documented pandemic processes or protocols used? And if so, will there be any changes made to them?
So I would say we have a business continuity, incident response, disaster recovery plans. We have all of those. The scenario, this is funny, I wish I could go find the tabletop exercise we did a few years ago on bird flu. We actually tabletopped a what if the whole firm had to work remote. And this was a discussion, I think it was maybe 4 years ago. I can't remember, but we thought about this and decided that we were going to plan to make sure that the entire firm could work remote. And that could be challenging because, number one, not everybody always works remote. Your practice assistants, for example, probably have desktops and work in the office. Your lawyers should all have laptops by now. So they're used to it. Your managers, same thing. Your IT people, same thing. But you're still going to have people that generally work on desktop computers. So what we did is we ended up building a virtual desktop environment. And we scoped that out to be able to take a capacity of hundreds of virtual machines. And we ran some scenarios and found out, ooh, we don't quite have enough resources, so maybe we need to buy some more. We ended up buying more virtual hosts. We ended up doing it in both of our data centers because we run a active-active auto failover live data center pair. So we also have to take into account not only what if we all have to work from home, but what if we have to all work from home and the primary data center goes offline? So we did already kind of go through that as a tabletop exercise and a planning exercise. And so now with this hitting, it's really just a chain of physical office unavailable business continuity plans. So we started with Seattle because it was the first state that issued a stay-at-home order. The next state was Oregon, so Portland came next. Then after that, actually, no, that's not true. California came right before Portland. So California and Portland almost at the same time. Portland like couldn't decide whether or not to be a stay-at-home state right away. California decided and then initially cited a thing called the CISA Critical Infrastructure Guide. So there's 16 types of critical infrastructure in the United States that the Department of Homeland Security considers critical that will have to operate no matter what. Legal services is not one of them, though I have heard that the ABA is now lobbying to get legal services to be critical infrastructure. Well, good luck. But because of that, if anyone out there has offices in California, you likely saw the first order from Gavin Newsom that said that only organizations identifying as critical infrastructure could keep people at work. Everyone else had to work from home, period. Now, I heard through the grapevine that some law firms tried to cite, well, there's confusing orders between the governor and the city of San Francisco, so or whatever, and we're still going to have people in our law firm office. That is each individual firm's risk to accept if they chose to do so. I would say I am not a lawyer, but unless I'm mistaken, in a situation at the state level, the governor order would absolutely, you know, supersede, right, any city order. So I don't know where the confusion was from, but I think it was just kind of a weak excuse to try and stay open. For us, everybody went home except, you know, Newsom came out that Sunday and said, oh, well, core services can still work. So for us, we outsourced some of our services to Epic Systems. So we outsourced our copy center, mailroom, reception, catering, and records. People who all have to work on site. So when we looked at our business continuity and DR plans, one of the contingencies we had to have was, what if we can't have anyone on site? What do we do? So initially in California, we sent all that physical stuff to our Portland office because here in Oregon, the order still allowed basic business operations if people had no choice but to physically be there, provided you observed all the social distancing and other requirements. So we initially actually rerouted mail and all this other stuff from California, copy jobs, et cetera, went to Portland centrally. Once California decided to be more clear on their order, we are running one copy center in our largest California office. For the other two very small offices, we're still managing stuff centrally there because it's just easier. But we, you know, we had plans for this. And the ultimate scenario plan was we would have to use contractors' site, like Epic has various sites where they can do processing. And we would have ended up sending like mail copy center scanning requests to the central processing site that they can still maintain, assuming they could maintain it. Now this goes back to my first point, right, about physical stuff being the big challenge. What do you do if no one can do it? Because remember, legal is not critical infrastructure. We had some interesting things we found out from our vendors that weren't in our business continuity plan. For example, we store records offsite and we asked our offsite records provider, are you still gonna service us? And they said, well, absolutely, because you're qualifying under medical. And we said, wait a minute, what? Turns out, because we have a labor and employment practice, we have a business associate agreement because we are a subcontractor, a business associate, to covered entities for a number of our labor employment practices, because we want to pass through our security controls to everyone that either stores, transmits, accesses, or processes our information. We have a business associate agreement with our record storage vendors. And they saw that in their system and went, oh, look, a BAA. This organization does work for medical, which is true, but we're not a hospital. Nevertheless, as a part of their business continuity plan, they basically said, anyone who identifies as being providing services to critical infrastructure, we will service no matter what. So because we had the business associate agreement in place, we were already on the list automatically. We have a BAA with, well, I've utilized BAAs in another way before, where clients will say, do you contractually enforce good security with all your vendors? And our answer is yes, right? Because in the business associate agreement, one of the sections of that agreement requires enforcement of security controls. So right now, that's especially important because we rely on vendors quite a bit when working from home. You know, we're still going through our data centers, but we are relying on things like our courier service. We're relying on our organization we use for outside services. We are relying on, of course, cloud service providers, which we rely on anyway, but it's a little bit heavier in some cases now because we're all coming in over the internet or over VPN, you know, either SSL on the internet or VPN direct to our data center and then over the internet, depending on the type of service. So having those service level agreements right now when the internet is terribly congested around the world is really important. And we've been getting really good service. I would say that, you know, there have been a few little challenges with bandwidth, but that's not something that we can control. We have a massive amount of bandwidth going to our gear. It's more the person's like home network, like which region of the US are you in? How do you, you know, how is your home network performing? And we've had to do some interesting things, like tell people when you're working, please have the kids stop streaming 4K UHD. If you're having connection problems, you know, please, you know, go turn off your smart home if that's taking up bandwidth. If you're having challenges with calls, you might consider just doing audio instead of audio and video. You may not want to necessarily send an email with a 16 meg attachment while you're doing a video conference call. You know, we've been helping people with a little bit of kind of training on the minutiae, right? Like how to make things more effective when you're working from home.
Yep.
But overall, it's gone really well. We've been really happy.
Excellent. Well, my final question is, based upon all the great info you've given us, what would you do differently, or have there been any grandiose lessons learned from having to almost instantly switch over to a remote office workplace?
Yeah, I would say the first thing is doing a better job of socializing the importance of going paperless. So it's not about saving trees. You know, we could have an argument about trees. Trees are a renewable resource. You can grow more of them. But at the same time, you also aren't wasting trees. So you do have some positive environmental impact from going paperless. But from a business operational perspective, our cost of storing paper, yeah, it's money, but it's offsite record storage or storage in the office and handling of paper. Sure, we could save some money, but it's really not even about saving money or saving trees. It's about being resilient. So paper is a single instance thing. It's not replicated unless you make copies of it. And it would be kind of silly for a lawyer to think, you know, I'm just going to copy every folder and keep a paper copy at my office. Now, do we all think we have one of those? Yeah, I'm sure we do, right? I'm sure there's someone right now thinking, I'm going to, you know, add an addition to my house and make it my home file cabinet. And I hope that's not going to happen, but we can't prevent that. But what we should do is think about how flexible can we be working electronically. So one of our California offices, one of our smaller ones, the entire office is practically paperless because they just elected to do that because they like to work remote. They like to, you know, they're more technology focused. They like to do that kind of stuff. And so we did an office move about a year ago. That office, we went down there to move the paper and found out there wasn't any. They had been taking folders and just setting them on the shelf. And they said, you know, we don't really need these. And so we had to adjust our process to account for that office. Like, they're really not printing things. They're saving it to the document management system. They're filing appropriately. and they're just working really flexibly. And so when this event hit, those people obviously just naturally worked from home. You know, that's what they can do anyway. They didn't have to grab files. They didn't have to worry about things. Like, I'm sure there's some printing involved. You know, if you're doing trademark work, you're doing filings, you're going to be making paper. I would say printers in general, I mean, it's a risk calculation. So I don't know that I would do printing differently. Right now, we're telling people to just be, you know, cautious and sending out instructions and tip sheets on home printing. Now, some of you out there might think, oh my God, but what about home printers and the risk of data remnants on a home printer? Yeah. It's not the same as a copier. Home printers generally have goldfish memories. If you reboot them, they're starting life over. You know, they don't have the hard drives for reprints and storage generally that something like a, you know, Canon or, you know, Minolta copier will have.
Yeah, mine barely likes to keep the Wi-Fi setting, so.
Right. So they're, you know, the scanner, same thing, right? You reboot the home scanner, MFP, whatever. They're not designed for that level of resilience. So in a good way, right, you probably don't have that much to worry about with data remnants on the home equipment. But that doesn't mean it's not impossible. So for example, if you're using a virtual desktop, someone's accessing that from your home computer. Now, we have built a membrane on that computer so that you can't bring a file and save it locally on your home computer. You're sending keyboard, you know, video, mouse traffic, KVM traffic over that session and looking at it through, you know, an SSL connection. There's, of course, ways that people could get the data to their home computer. They could try emailing it to their personal email. We've advised people not to do that. We watch that on the email servers. We do a daily report and try and watch DLP for people doing things like sending stuff to a, you know, personal email address. Of course, we can't block that because we have clients that use personal email addresses, right? So it all comes back to like what's reasonable. I think differently, I might maybe do a little bit more with scanning. You know, we are scanning mail and routing it to people. We're going to be building a better system for doing that because it's a little bit manual right now because obviously people aren't in the office. We're not scanning junk mail. You know, if you get a J.Crew ad, it's going to sit at your desk until you get back. But if you get, you know, UPS, courier, FedEx, all that kind of stuff, we are scanning it and sending it to people so they know what do we need to do with this. They may just need to file it or they may say, oh no, I have to process this. They might have us actually courier the paper to them, which, by the way, the reason I mentioned courier is it's important that we maintain chain of custody in situations like this, because what you don't want to do is lose paper in the middle of this either, because just because we're having to work from home because of COVID-19 doesn't mean we abdicate our responsibility for managing physical assets, right? I would say just the grandiose lesson, though, right now is a positive one. Business continuity planning is awesome. This is why you do it, right? We might every year now that I go in and we have to argue, why do we still spend this money on that second, you know, view environment and the secondary data center? And the argument will be, here's why, right? We just saw that we kept the firm going 100% through this entire crisis because we plan on this. It's an insurance policy. And right, there's some, you know, capital cost or fixed cost to it. But the real cost of this insurance policy is just people taking the effort every year to go through their business continuity plans to make sure you've done a business impact assessment for each business continuity plan. You go through those every year too, because those can change. One of the things that came out of our BIAs that was really important is that without IT, everyone is practically dead. I mean, there was no core department that did a business impact assessment that didn't have IT dependencies. As a, what if IT was unavailable for a month? It was like, we're dead. So it doesn't mean that you have a situation where you're going to be dead necessarily. It means that you have a situation where you're going to have to invest money to make sure that that scenario has the lowest possible likelihood of happening.
Yeah, agreed. Well, John, thank you so much for your time today. Again, I'm John Washburn, Chief Information Security Officer at Stoll Reeves. John, always a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope you stay safe, you and your family at home. And hopefully maybe we'll cover some more of these questions in another session soon.
No, thanks. You too. And make sure you join at least one virtual happy hour a week for your sanity.
I think I may. Thank you so much, sir.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.